And we're podcasting from Chico, California, and home of the world's largest functional yo-yo. This is Cinema Stash Rehash Movie Podcast with Jason, Wyatt, and Chris. We talk about 80s and 90s movies and provide insights about them you didn't know you needed or wanted. So sit back, relax, and join us. We're just about ready to get started.
Let loose the Kraken! The kingdom of Acrisius must be destroyed.
As you command.
And welcome back to another episode of Cinema Stash Rehash. I'm Jason McLendon, and with me is Wyatt Campbell.
Hello.
Chris Madsen.
As always.
And we've got our resident stop motion animator and filmmaker, Mr. Josh Funk, back with us today.
Hey.
And today we're going to do a wonderful stop motion animated movie, I would say, that got me into a lot of stuff like Jason and the Argonauts and Sinbad and all that stuff from, you know, way back then, watching it on TNT and TBS. But we're going to do Clash of the Titans today, 1981. Anyway, I grew up loving this movie. There was just so much on such a wide scale. It was giving you so much to look at. And for me, I just kind of wanted to see what everybody else thought about this movie, especially with the stop motion and all the crazy special effects that they did for what they could accomplish back then.
I, too, grew up on this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the owl and some of the little, you know, things they have that are, you know, Pegasus and some of the whimsical stuff kind of keep you reeled in as a kid, but also the scary stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Medusa petrified me into stone when I was a kid.
Yeah. The Kraken.
Yeah, the Kraken. See, the Kraken to me wasn't as scary as Medusa. Never was, you know?
And for me, what I thought that what they should never have done was give you a close-up image of the Kraken. Because the close-up image of the Kraken was bad, but when it's like swimming around and coming up with the stop motion and putting his hand on rocks, I mean, that was pretty cool. But when as soon as they saw it, it was like there was no real great detail to the face or anything that made it look really good.
It kind of looked like a toy when they went too close up. But with Medusa, it was amazing because Ray Harryhausen had different models. So he had a larger model for the close-up of the head.
Okay.
So it's much more detailed, and I don't think he did that with the Kraken.
So, Josh, could you give our audience a little more info on who Harryhausen is? That's his name?
Yeah, Ray Harryhausen. He is, I guess, they don't really say, what do they call it? It's not the father of stop motion, because that would be Willis O'Brien, who did King Kong in 1933. But he was an apprentice for Willis O'Brien, and he worked on Mighty Joe Young in 1949. And then went on to basically just revolutionize stop motion animation. And he created his own version that he branded Dynamation, which is kind of a marketing thing. But what was different about it, instead of using a bunch of miniatures, which he did use sometimes, but to cut costs, because he was working on films that were just so, the budgets were so low, he would have them film these plates. So basically he would go tell them, I want to get this shot of these buildings, and then he would in the foreground he would animate frame by frame while it was being projected from behind on a screen. So he's basically re-photographing the puppet with the footage,
right?
So it looks like they exist in the same spot. And it was just revolutionary, and it made it more real than anything.
Is that how they did the water too? When the water was like very beginning of the movie where the Kraken does the waves.
That's a really great effect. I was watching that, and I had ideas of how they did it. I think that's how they did it, but it was really convincing. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, some of it was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And some was like, wow.
Some of it was real. They actually waited a couple of weeks for the right weather.
Like, wow, that's
but
that's pretty impressive.
In the flood area, that was not. I think that was an effect with miniatures.
That was obviously a guy dumping a bucket of water on the
miniature. you could tell. I mean, you could tell because the water would wash in and then they just disappear.
Right.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing that and thinking, like, my God, on this kind of a scale for that time, you know, it didn't pull me out of the movie. I was still like, you know, the effects definitely still kept
me.
Take me out of it.
Definitely.
They were great. They were the next best thing to, like, animation, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
It was, you know, something that wasn't there.
Well, what I would say about this movie is I didn't grow up with it like most movies you guys, you know, the early 80s movies anyways.
Yeah.
And this movie felt, when I watched it, it felt a little old. It felt older. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but just...
It has that classical look to it, you know?
You know, and some of the actors were older actors as well, you know?
Yeah, oh, you had Laurence Olivier, yeah. who was old
And so it makes sense, but I thought when Jason picked it, I thought it was an early, like a 60s movie, just because it felt at the time.
Yeah,
and then watching it, I was very impressed with a lot of the stop-go animation and a lot of the effects.
Right.
But I did think just like, man... I felt like it just was old. It just felt old, the movie.
Yeah.
Well, you got to think. I mean, they came out in 81, but I mean, the stop motion animation that they were doing in this, and how we talk about how long it takes to do this shit.
Yeah.
You got to think that they were probably filming it, in 79, even, you know, or God knows. I mean, would you say maybe a year's worth of work on just stop motion?
They started the script was finalized in 1979, and they started shooting it shortly after. But yeah, it took a few years, and then. Actually, maybe it was a little earlier than that, but they, going back to what you just said, it was Star Wars came out in 1977, and it kind of just, everyone was so used to a certain kind of effect, and all of a sudden Star Wars comes out and they're like, oh, but that looks real. So just in comparison, this movie just didn't hold up.
That's a great comparison for sure. Because I was like, because I really did like it. It was a really good movie watching it through. And there was parts I loved. Medusa was awesome. I love Medusa part.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind the Kraken. Because to me, a Kraken is a, you know, some kind of octopus or something.
Yeah.
So it was cool to see a different, and I'm trying to think, I try to think back, you guys watched this movie growing up, but when this first came out, it was early VHS. You know,
it was on TV a lot.
Well, yeah,
that's how I saw it.
But the VHS tape probably would have been fairly unclear to when you watch it. You would have been like, "Holy crap, that Kraken's pretty cool."
We're
watching on like high definition TV.
But it's still
kind of judging it. Seems like, you know, like a late 70s movie, because I feel like they had to have started like early 70s to get that much shit.
Well, that much shit, you would think so.
Yeah, I mean,
but that was what I was going to say about this movie, is because the mythological part of this movie is apparently way off.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, because he referenced Star Wars, but Bubo, the mechanical owl, was basically wrote into the movie to capitalize on what R2-D2 became.
Yeah.
You know, that was the main reason why they threw that in there, which I thought it was funny because, like, you know, the times, and all of a sudden the gods just had this amazing ability to make mechanical robots, which was pretty cool.
Well, they're gods.
I mean, well, yeah, they can pretty much do whatever they want, I suppose. But yes, the sea monster, which was the Kraken that they use in this, was apparently a Norwegian mythological creature. And the actual Greek mythology creature that would have been actually the one that was terrorizing Joppa and Andromeda was supposed to be called a Cetus, which was a whale. So I mean, they're getting things all kind of confused, and
they got all Hollywood about it.
They did. They're you know,
they're like, it's not Hollywood enough for a whale to be terrorized.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with their decision, though.
Was there a Kraken in every city?
No, the Kraken was just, they called it one of the Titans, you know, and like,
so it could just appear wherever. He went down south and pulled that gate open.
Yeah, I think they have it
totally
like
different areas.
It was Poseidon's pet.
I think that Zeus and Poseidon can summon it, you know, so it's like a captured Titan in this story. I don't think in any mythology is it that, but I think that's what they're kind of positing in this, is that.
Yeah, and that was another thing about what you mentioned about Titans is that, you know.
Yeah, the Kraken wasn't a Titan, neither was Medusa, but they're you know, portrayed as such
as,
in the movie.
As Titans, yeah. The most popular two Titans in Greek mythology was Kronos, which they actually used in Wrath of the Titans, which was the sequel to the newer one, you know. And the other Titan was, I'm losing my place, of course, was Atlas. And they were the two famous, and none of them made an appearance in this movie at all. Yeah. But, you know, I don't care, because, you know, I grew up loving the movie without it. But, you know, if you're a mythological, you know, goer, then, you know, this movie did not make it for him. And maybe that's, you know, I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, it does have some, you know, right off the bat, they kind of try and like flex their like Greek muscles, you know, it's like Zeus. Yeah. And then he's just like, for no reason or another, like saying everybody's name and you.
Yeah.
Or not Andromeda, but, you know, like.
He had to introduce everyone.
Yeah, he did. But. You pretty much don't hear from a few of them for the rest of the movie.
That's true.
But it was
the main ones was Thetis and
the Harry Potter lady. And
exactly, then, Maggie Smith. And then you had Aphrodite, Poseidon, Athena, and some other ones that, like you said, you don't really ever. They don't have a speaking role, really.
No.
I mean, right off the bat, I thought it was interesting because, you know, they're very vengeful.
Nothing can wipe out or forgive this. one contemptible act of blood.
I mean, this movie is about them being vengeful gods.
Yeah.
You know, because apparently, you know, Zeus visited Perseus's mother, which was the king, which mother was the queen of Argos or whatever. Right. And he impregnates her. So he just decides to cast her out in this with him in the coffin as she's floating away. And the one part that, I mean, it's so minor, but I mean, I was taken away from the guy who was just cursing up at the gods to spite them or whatever, and he's just got a mouthful of modern fillings. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
He might have had a watch on, too. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he could have. He probably did, you know.
I, Acrisius the king, now purge her crime and restore my honor.
I was laughing at the Zeus part. I didn't pick this up as a kid, but like Zeus basically just goes around disguising himself and seducing women and having all these offspring and like it's pretty pretty sleazy there.
Yeah, Zeus is a predator, man. Yeah. Like he
apparently is not banging other goddesses, you know. Where else is he going to get his jollies?
He likes that human tang.
Well, he went for a Harry Potter lady, and she said no, thank you to that. So.
The one part that I really did enjoy with this movie was the when they finally make it to Olympus. And by the way, for the gods, they live kind of in a shithole. I mean, what I mean by it is like, you know, the castle's nice, don't get me wrong, but then like the whole atmosphere around it's very gloomy. You know, so I was kind of thrown by that. I was like, okay. But I love the all the clay statues that they have to represent everybody.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's a clay statue for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and how that transitions between scenes. They put a clay guy down and... There
for every human being?
For every human being, I think.
I was wondering if that was for every human being or for all of his offspring.
Oh, that's a good point, too. Because they had one of Calibus, too, which was Thetis's son.
But Calibus was the offspring of Harry Potter lady.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe it's all demigods, you know, all the demigods
that's a good point.
That were offsprung by...
That's a good point. So,
any of the gods.
And I loved the stop motion. I'm assuming it was stop motion of the transformation of him in the shadow.
Oh, the shadow.
The shadow transformation of Calibus into that, into Mr. Nasty. You know, so that was one of my favorite parts. I mean, I love that as a kid watching him just go, and he just becomes this nasty thing.
And he's got his fro. Like, that is about the most 80s thing about this movie is Calibus's fro.
Oh, man. We have to have a perm, you know.
I love it. If it was nipples up, it was live action. And if it was body shot... Straight. That was hilarious to me. Even with that said, it was still, I mean, like I said, it just seems old. So watching it today, I'm still impressed with it because I think, holy cow, that was really old when they did that. It's impressive.
Yeah.
So either way, I'm going to be pretty impressed with it no matter what they do. But the time spent on some of the things that they went through, the tale of Medusa was super cool.
Yeah.
Medusa was incredible. I only remembered two things about this from when I watched it as a kid. Medusa was the main thing, and then the other one was the clay statues. Those were the two things I was like, yeah, I remember this.
Yes.
But Medusa, kind of going back to what I was saying before, the reason that it's so realistic is that they filmed on a real set, and then he had the puppet, and he had these... kind of like a wheel of different colored cellophane of like red, orange, yellow, and as he's animating, he's slowly turning it so that the light is shining through these different colors that makes it look like fire is reflecting on the puppet, like it really exists.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's amazing.
And it was so it was just such a great idea, and it really sold it. You really thought that the puppet was there.
Yeah,
and I really appreciate the stop motion quality to fantasy creatures. I thought it really worked in that scene. It was almost like the ideal Harryhausen animation that like he'd worked his whole life up to that moment, and it's just brilliant. Absolutely.
It adds some creepiness to it.
It does.
Stop animation just gives it kind of gives Medusa kind of a weird movement when she moved it. It added it to me.
I want to know the snakes. I mean there's so much stop animation with that character. I mean, you're animating about what eight or nine or ten snakes off this head, and plus you got her doing the rattle. And I mean, the whole idea of having
even
stop
like shooting the bow and arrow.
Oh, everything
impressive.
I mean, shit, that had to have been the most stop animation ever. To be able to do that, it had to take forever.
There's a fun trivia about the Medusa thing. So in Monsters, Inc., they named the restaurant Harryhausen's, and Mike Wazowski's girlfriend has all the snakes, and it's all in honor of Ray Harryhausen and this movie.
That's awesome. Oh, by the way, just for the fans and for myself and for, you know, me, boobies were clocked at 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, not bad. And some decent side boob, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Side boob's underrated. And I think it needs to be used more.
I did think it was interesting, though, the naked walk with, you know, the sun on the beach. That was kind of weird.
Don't forget Medusa.
That was kind of weird.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Scale
Medusa.
Yeah.
Funk. There was a couple. I didn't really enjoy the animation of Pegasus. Yeah, flying around. It was kind of weird.
There's
the horse is kind of flying around like a, you know, I don't know.
I think the animation of Pegasus early on was great, but I think what you're
actually
reacting
in
to is, yeah, it's the
love. Compositing. I love Pegasus was awesome because, I mean, a horse with wings, that's because it, I believed the horse with wings. What I didn't believe is that when it flew, I was like, but I didn't have any problem believing. So it was really good. The horse with wings was amazing animation because I didn't think about that. The horse wouldn't have wings.
Yeah, but what
was so that's pretty amazing. But,
yeah.
But with seeing the horse fly around, it just didn't make sense. I don't know.
I think part of the problem was with Dynamation, it's one of the flaws is you couldn't really match the color and the brightness very well when you're mixing a puppet and an actor together. So they don't really, sometimes they didn't seem like they existed in the same spot. And I thought that was a part in the compositing where it didn't really hold up.
Right.
But,
and they're putting it against a backdrop of exactly.
And it was real obvious cutaways to like,
yeah, like to show him on top where he's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. The horse is bucking and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, what are you running on, horse? I don't know. Yeah. Like,
so the funny, I laughed numerous times of when, like, you know, how the gods interacted with mortal life as far as, like, you know, like the statues coming alive and like talking to the, you know, mortals, you know, and stuff like that. And especially with Theotis, I think that's how you pronounce her name, Maggie Smith's character, you know, when she's talking about Calibus and all that stuff, and to Calibus, actually.
Yeah.
You know, but his...
Is it for revenge?
Yeah.
Perseus is protected by Zeus himself.
But Calibus was an interesting character. You know, his whole, you know, he was supposed to marry Andromeda, and then that's what, and then since Zeus, and Zeus was pissed off because he killed all of his flying horses except for Pegasus. So that's why he did what he did, basically, from what I picked up. And he got all pissed when Theotis actually punished, you know, in a sense, Perseus by placing him in Joppa's, like, theater. And he's all, well, give him, since you did this, you bitch, give him swords and shields.
Yeah, but he said it way creepier than that.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He was a Chester molester, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a weird, I mean.
But I thought, the part that, you know, it's like, then you show him there, and he's just, like, hacking in the air with the sword, and it looks so bad, and, like, right then you're supposed to, like, assume that he can fight, you know, and that part, because there's no real reason for me to believe that he's a warrior. But yeah, the rest of the movie, he is a warrior.
Well,
he's
doing
like
tricks
the
on a,
warrior.
He was doing tricks on a horse.
Yeah,
that's kind
well,
of
yeah, well, yeah, you know, but I just thought the development of him becoming this warrior and like the hacking of the sword in the middle of the sand there, like, was the reason that you have to believe that he was some sort of a warrior.
Yeah, it kind of felt like, because you see the Zeus side of the story, it felt like a spoiled rich kid who gets everything handed to him.
Yeah.
And the rest of the gods, like, are like, you fucker. You know,
exactly.
Giving him everything.
Like that scene with the sword, like he comes off as like a rich kid who is just given a sword because he's just like, you know, like spinning around.
Yeah.
He's just going to like throw it down and be like, yeah, what's next? You know?
Yeah.
Did you guys hear it? Did you guys hear his end of monologue? And he's like, with the helmet? Invincible. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yes, an inner monologue.
Inner monologue, invincible. He did, though. He just got anything, you know. Zeus was a fan, and so he gave him anything he needed.
What about the helmet?
It has the power to render its wearer invisible. Invisible. Invisible.
And I thought, I don't know. I thought the shield was cool. The shield in Medusa was cool. The sword was kind of weird with the gems.
Oh, you know,
like Thanos' glove or something.
There is one thing in here, and I don't know how they did it. I think I know how they did it, but it still amazes me. Those invisible footprints.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching that, because now you just do it with CG, but I was like, how did they do that back then? It looks so good.
Did you pick it up, though? I love that scene for two reasons. A, I agree with you, but B, the footprints had modern shoe imprints.
Yeah.
So it had like designs to it. And like, you know, it's not that. Like a regular, like back in the day sandal where it would just been flat.
Hey, man. Do we figure they might have put less, you know, a little craftsmanship into the soles of their shoes.
Vans. Yeah, they had Vans back then.
It was like, oh,
Did they figure out how to do it?
A crewman just
figured out how they did it.
Well, I thought at first that you could have done it like stop motion where you basically take a footprint, someone gets out of the shot, you take it, you know, but the camera was moving. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it was, I don't know. But the only thing I could think of, and this is really elaborate, is that you have like something that drops underneath to reveal the footprint.
Like, yeah, just like the sand drops out.
Yeah.
But even then it was so realistic. Like it looked like you were walking. Yeah. It was pretty cool. So some of the stuff was amazing, like I said. You know what's crazy about this film? I don't know what else came out in 81. You're usually pretty good at that, Wyatt, knowing what movies rivaled this.
Well, what we're watching next, Time
Bandits.
Actually,
yeah. Time Bandits also came out
in 81. Okay, yeah. well, that one. Okay, so this movie did not win an Oscar for makeup or anything,
which is kind
of crazy. So I was trying to think about what movies came out. Time Bandits does not fucking count. I mean, freaking count.
So
it doesn't.
So,
but you usually have a couple, you know, opponents of this movie in the time frame.
Not on my sleeve at the moment, but I'll get back to you.
You'll get back to us. I always want to know, guys, because I watch it thinking, I love this part. I love this part. Oh, this is my favorite part. What's your favorite? What is your favorite? It doesn't have to be animation part, just of the movie. What was your favorite part you enjoyed the most? And we can start with Josh since he's sitting next to
me. I mean, definitely Medusa.
Medusa hands down.
It really could have ended after that scene for me. It was so good.
Yeah,
you know, Medusa was pretty
to me. There was no topping Medusa, pretty much. I think.
It was so cinematic. It was just, I don't know. It was, as far as special effects go, I think it was right up there for that time. For some of the shots, it held up. I also thought, you know, the story right there was so amazing. I always thought that as a kid, like, wow, you can't look at her. How are you gonna defeat her? It just seems impossible. And he found a way.
Yeah, the shield mirror.
Yeah,
I guess. Why do you have it? Do you have a different favorite part of Medusa? Because like that was
Medusa the best was awesome, part, but so was another part we haven't talked about, which was like when Calibus stabs Medusa's head in the bag and
the scorpions.
The scorpions were cool. Yeah.
Yeah, the scorpions were pretty bitchin'.
But I also thought it was weird how like he stabs the bag and then all that blood comes out, but then the whole like there's no more blood that comes out. Like it's just he uses the same bag, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where's that blood coming from?
Well, it's coming from Medusa's head, but I mean, like, why didn't more come out? It's just like a couple drops come out and it's...
She bled out.
He cut her head off. She would have bled out already.
I guess.
And the bag wasn't bloody. Don't ask that part
when he did cut the head off, you know, and like Medusa's like flopping around and all of a sudden she finally lays down officially and all that blood just comes out like a tube of toothpaste. Yeah. You know, it's just like bleh. You know, it's like I remember that because as a kid, I'm like, oh, I love that part for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm surprised there wasn't more blood spray to... But they had to keep it PG, I think, so it wasn't going to get too bad.
Yeah, but this movie's not PG, you know. I mean, but back then it was.
Oh, holy
know?
Shit! I mean,
no, it is. I think it is PG.
It is PG, but I didn't think about. I mean, there's maybe boobs aren't. Who cares, right?
Yeah, I mean, for boobs, you know, it's like what you know, like I said.
The first boob was a nursing boob, that's totally okay nowadays.
Yeah. That's acceptable.
Yeah,
but apparently it was definitely acceptable back then.
They do side
too.
Boob on like Family Guy, so.
Yeah. what did you guys think about the vulture scene?
Okay, so I was gonna say that was probably my I really liked that scene a lot because I listened to it with my headphones on and it was a pretty powerfully loud scene. I really liked the vulture. I liked that. Liked that scene. I thought it was cool. I mean, the whole scene where she came out of her body and I thought that was cool.
That was an interesting part to me because like how he can call to her subconscious.
Yeah. Was it her soul or her subconscious?
I don't know because she's still laying in bed and then she comes out. Maybe it's the soul. I don't know.
Yeah. I think he had her soul cursed or imprisoned or something.
I don't know.
And they were using an old school effect there, a double exposure. So she just stayed in bed for a really long shot and then they like filmed again with her getting up and walking out and they kind of put them on top of each other.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's so cool.
They were using that in early... Like
I have to remember when I watch these movies that it's 2018. You know what I mean? It's like 40 years ago.
That's why I love doing what we do is because you have to look at it that way.
Sometimes you don't, and sometimes you think, wow, this, you know, this. But to think back, I mean, I'm trying to think when people watched it I mean, people our age watching it for the first time going, holy crap, look what's happening right now.
Well, as a kid, it blew those my mind.
Scorpions are probably so cool.
Yeah, it blew my mind when I was a kid, it still kind of does.
Yeah, it's true. It still kind of does, for sure. Especially when Josh is here talking about how, you know, all the work he goes into it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
if you think about
it, it puts a different perspective for sure.
The double exposure when she was getting up, they also did that on the Maggie Smith on the statue.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And what did you guys think of that? That part.
I thought it was cool. I liked that part too.
It worked. It worked, but yeah. you could tell like that she naturally had to like keep her head straight, you know, because like if she turned over the slightest, you know, like her nose would go out of line.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it's like when she's looking at Calibus, she's just like moving her eyes. She's like, is it revenge?
I like how the gods came through their statues though. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. The way they interact.
The weapons came. Yeah. Things like that.
Yeah, the Maggie Smith part reminded me of the Haunted Mansion with the...
For sure.
Yeah. At the end. Or the busts.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Even with that said, though, I thought it was... I mean, I don't know. It made me think if God was going to come through and talk, that's how they would do it, probably. So.
Okay, so seriously, the three witches.
That was a very quick scene.
Paperweight.
Yeah, there was a scene with that, and I guess, I mean, you can kind of see, and I read about this part, which the three witches who had the seeing eye, and they gave him the info on, you know, the one person or the creature that could possibly defeat the Kraken.
What do you see? Yes, a young man, not plump, but well made.
And one of the blind witches, as she reaches and grabs the eye from one of the other ones, has little holes poked in her eyes so she can see through the...
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, you know, I read about it, and then as I was watching it, I was looking for it, and you can kind of see that, but that's like...
I didn't
notice. For me, that's like really when the movie picks up, because the movie was great. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I loved from the beginning all the way through, because, you know, the special effects shot all the way through, they all were captivating. I still loved every bit of it. But as soon as they ditch Andromeda, you know, and Perseus goes off and they go to, that's when the movie, and then they get to the three-headed dog. Well, two-headed dog. Originally it was supposed to be three heads, you know, but Howson could not have the time to animate a third head to that dog.
That shot may have been animated by one of his assistants too.
This is
the first movie he had assistants of his own, because it was such a massive budget for him. He was
true.
And they had so much to do it. So he had Steve Archer and Jim Danforth work on this with him. And I think one of them animated at least
dog.
Most of that.
Yeah. That part made me laugh, though, the dog part, because, you know, he had his...
Like when one head's hanging off the side.
Well, yeah, because that's going to be like 30 pounds of dead weight, you know? It's like I'll pull the dog down. But the really funny part that got me on that part was, you know, they have like the red uniforms from Star Trek, you know, because those guys, they have their helmets on, and you obviously know they're going to die.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean,
those are the red uniform guys from Star Trek. Uh-huh. But anyway, they're fighting the two-headed dog, and like, meanwhile, Perseus is over there combating this ridiculous snake that's interwoven around his sword. Yeah. And you're just like, why? Just pick up the fucking sword, you know? That would have been, but he did it for 30 seconds, and then he comes right in and kills the dog in like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, but, you know.
He's useless without the sword.
Oh, shit.
He's patient because he was like, oh, no, I'm just going to wait for that snake to go away.
You just used a really cool word. I don't know if I've ever heard the word intertwoven before.
Intertwoven, yeah.
It's very British. Yeah. It sounds perfect for this movie.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
The snake is in a twoven.
Yes.
That was good. Twoven. Yeah, and he kind of gingerly picks up the sword, like, oh, God, and then he just goes fights the dog.
Yeah.
You're just waiting for him to go, like, go away, serpent.
That's actually the part where he just, you know, finally shows that he is the badass that you're supposed to believe he is.
I think right after that dog scene it starts the best part of the movie, because when he walks up to the stone guy in the Medusa area, for sure.
But you know, as a kid, I remember the right after they ditched Andromeda and they hit that the River of Death. And it's the skeleton fairy. And I just remember that scene really big.
With the hand and the
coin. Oh, the hand and the skeleton going like this. I mean,
yeah, I like at the end when he looks back at him real slow.
Yeah. You can hear the creaking of the bones, like, you know, crunching as it was. It was one of my favorite scenes.
I don't want to be a dick, but Andromeda was like, man, right. You know what I mean? Like, She was supposed to be like this all and everything. And
I mean,
the side boob is pretty good.
It helps. It doesn't.
Wyatt
seem like
has some pretty good side boobs. So.
Yeah. I don't wear enough tank tops.
No, you don't. You don't take enough baths, is what it is. Nah, I'm just saying. That was a joke. She's beautiful.
I didn't, you know, like probably most of anybody who was my age watching it when we were kids, it's like you never thought twice about Andromeda. It was all about that, like that trek, like when Jason was saying, like, right the minute when she gets, like, you know, put up for sacrifice and then he goes on his trek to go get Medusa's head. It's like that's when the movie starts, you know.
It pretty much is for me.
Everything leading up to that, you know, is kind of this boring, you know, drawn out, you know, you're kind of getting to know that the gods are vengeful and like how they're tied to the humans. But
yeah,
but it's not as fun as, like, you know, once they start setting out on that trek with the owl and, you know, and the three witches, you know, they go there first. And it's just, you know,
speaking of the owl, man, I mean, the owl is pretty much the comedy relief of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that fucking thing was the most clumsiest freaking mechanical thing ever. I
like
how it,
like, flies around and moves around all the place. And then when they, like, have it on their head, like, when they go to the witches and one of the guards has it.
Yeah, it's just like this.
It's like this rigid
thing, yeah.
You know, like, yeah, like an owl you'd put on a roof for pigeons.
Just the puppet.
Oh, man. Yeah. But, I mean, Bobo was, yeah, he was. I mean,
even Beep, like R2 too. He's
kind of. That's the whole reason why I was there, I guess. You know, and it's just.
Yeah, I heard an interview with Harryhausen where he actually denied the R2 thing. He's like, we were planning on doing that before that. So I don't know which one is true. But
yeah, well, I read that it was due to capitalize, but I mean, yeah, maybe it wasn't. Maybe he.
There was probably two different stories there.
I wonder if there's an old owl for sale, because that'd be pretty cool to have on my shelf.
Yeah,
I wonder if they sold. I mean, they had to have, if it was marketed for toys and stuff, they had to have sold some.
I wonder if they actually pulled that out of the archive for the remake, because Bubo, or however you really pronounce it, did make the appearance.
He was?
Like, well, it made an appearance, but it was in the background in the remake of Clash of Titans.
Kind of an insult, I thought. I saw the scene, so he kind of picks up a bunch of stuff, like, yeah, in an armory area.
Exactly.
He picks up, was it Bobo or Bubo?
And I don't think he even picks him up. I think it was just like, you can kind of just see him in the background. Like, or, yeah.
Or what's this
thing? I remember that he did make a small appearance, but it was like, oh, come on. I actually wanted to see that. I mean, that's when, you know, when you make a remake and you try to, you know, not use certain things, it's kind of like, you're kind of just
at the same
it off.
Time, though, like, it wouldn't have been the same CGI than the way they did it, like, now.
Well, that's Bobo, that's the thing was, I hate
to me,
about
I liked Bobo because it was chunky and dumb and
clunky,
and it landed on a dead
branch and it
fell
falls
out
in the water. Yeah.
And it, like, blinked its eyes a couple times and, like, moved its head. You know,
yeah.
It was silly. I mean, it didn't. I don't think it added a lot of comedy relief. And as far as maybe R2 added more, I don't know. But
yeah,
I don't think it was very helpful.
I don't think it was very. I mean, it took him to places. It showed him.
Well,
things.
Speaking of which, the scorpion.
They had to further their quest along somehow. Yeah. Yeah. And so they use the owl as a furthering, which is fine.
Yeah. Well, and like I was going to say, the scorpion scene, he did his job because, you know, he
gets the bag, right?
Well, no, he was the one that, well, yeah, I think he does. But he does kind of like call out and goes, whoa, you know, whatever he does when the scorpions come alive. And, like, first off, how the fuck are you sleeping in that shit? It's like a goddamn monsoon going on in the morning. It's like blowing like crazy. And they're just like, you know, like suddenly they wake up. You're like, oh, they're scorpions. You know, it's like, how do they sleep
they're
in
like,
that
it's
shit?
It's still,
you know,
too warm for pants. Yeah. It's like, I'm thinking, I'm like, I mean, I guess it's the Mediterranean, but man.
I don't know. But I thought that was just fucking hilarious, though.
Thinking about their pants, huh, Wyatt?
Well, I mean, come on. Like, there's a lot of exposed thighs, a lot of rocks. It's like, I mean, I just would imagine, you know, no matter what the, you know, depicted style was, maybe if you were trekking it out, you would probably maybe wear something down to your knees.
Perseus had his robe.
Perseus hardly had a robe. He was wearing, like,
confident.
A curtain and, you know, like a little tunic or whatever. Either way, it's, you know, who knows? You
know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
The Greeks, they lived lavishly.
It wasn't even a Greek movie, honestly. So there's not much Greek in it besides
the initial
gods. I will say the female gods had no respect for Zeus at all. I mean,
oh no, they hated his ass.
Because
yeah, like,
they knew he was
give,
just
I want you to give the
there.
Owl, and she's like, it'll never happen.
Like, that was
okay,
a great part.
So yeah, so apparently she doesn't care about Zeus, and then Thetis is over there just like fucking around with or, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
No one cared about anything. I thought that was funny. Zeus doesn't have control over his kingdom at all.
No.
And he was a weird character. So
well,
Zeus such a strange character.
Yeah, and you got to think about it. And really, I mean, he's kind of a dick. You know, the whole movie, he was just all about just, you know, showering his son with
yeah
everything. you know, you can just see the god's faces in the background. They're just like, God, you're such a cock. You know, it's like, stop doing this, dude. Yeah. He doesn't deserve it. You know, I mean, he basically destroyed a kingdom because of you destroyed the kingdom. And like, he's all, we have to torture everybody. You know, we can't just torture the king of Argos. We got to like, just kill everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, why? I mean, you were the one that caused this shit anyway. You know, so vengeful as fuck, basically, is what he is.
Yeah. I don't get then why. So if he's basically in charge of everything, why does he care if they saw him? Like when Perseus collapses and he's, you know, he kind of like looks around like, and he picks him up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're fine.
Yeah.
Gets your energy back.
Yeah.
And why does he care if he's in charge of everything? What's the hierarchy there? Like,
well, I think he's starting to see that he was losing him a little bit because okay. like everything that they're saying, he's like, no, I have spoken, you know, kind mm-hmm. of like, you know, give him your owl because I've spoken.
It is my wish. My command.
You know, it's like he's basically trying to take everything from them. And then that was like the last straw. It was like, okay, it's the eve. It's the time. Andromeda's already at the rock. It's time. And he's like, very well, release the Kraken, you know. And so they leave. And he's like, well, I will give him that one little piece of, you know, I'll stand him back up. And he's refreshed and ready for battle or something like that. You know? That's how I looked at it. It was like that was his one little thing he could do.
Were you guys familiar with the actors at all? I mean, there's a couple. Obviously, Laurence Olivier is a great actor. I don't really know anything he's done, but Burgess Meredith was a big one for me because he used to be in. My brother and I used to watch.
That's right. We never really talked about him, and he's a great character.
You know, he's a great character. He's a great actor.
The Penguin.
And
yeah, Amon, I think is his name.
First, tell me where I am.
Where?
Where am I?
What do you mean you don't know where you are?
Yeah, he did. Twilight Zone. He was a couple of my favorite episodes of Twilight Zone he was in. And so that was
I love this character.
Because I didn't recognize any other actors really. I mean it felt like a really old movie, I'm telling you. For an 80s movie, I mean there was nobody in it I recognized. They were all pretty old.
Oh well yeah. I mean,
Ursula,
for sure.
Ursula Andress I've heard of. I mean of course Maggie Smith because of Harry Potter.
Harry Hamlin I recognize because he was in Shameless. Recently,
which is a modern show,
a modern TV show. So I was like, oh, that's the guy, because I never put it together when I was a kid. I grew up knowing
Harry Hamlin movies. Yeah,
he's been in something, but that just wasn't a lot of familiar actors in it for a couple really big. I mean, you know, some legendary actors for sure.
Well, I think they were also big back then.
Yeah. I think I'm saying
back then. I know 80s actors. And so big back then, they were big in like the 40s probably then.
Yeah, they weren't big of the 80s. They were like big,
It seems like most of the actors are in the twilight of their career though. You know, like if you look at...
Yeah, it seemed like they were all, you know, kind of like Shakespearean type actors too because they just... Yeah. I mean, they all had that same feel to them.
By the way, to answer your early question, other movies in 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Werewolf in London... you also had Scanners, Excalibur, just other movies that might have better makeup, special effects. So if I had to guess,
American Werewolf in London probably won that then.
Possibly.
I would imagine.
Well, you know, Excalibur actually is a crazy movie.
It is.
It's really crazy. And
I'll put it on the docket because
I wouldn't say the special effects are fantastic. What I would say is that the costume design and the armor in that movie was impeccable.
I would say makeup and special effects probably went to Werewolf in London, but that's
I would probably say so.
I mean, you can't deny the werewolf transformation in that by Rick Baker.
I imagine we all give this a pretty high rating. I mean, if we're going to do the ratings for this movie.
The only thing I want to bring up real quick is that made me laugh a lot was the underwater scene with Poseidon. Every time Poseidon was underwater, I was just chuckling. I mean, it's just like this hair flowing and his face looked like he wanted to take a shit every time.
He was
just grinning like, you know.
How'd they do that? Is he just underwater filming?
Just underwater in a tank, probably with rear projection.
Yeah.
But he was also really sick at that point. Like he was he wasn't doing so well. He had to lean against people during certain scenes,
so let's put him in water.
Yeah, he'll love that.
He's not gonna get better. No,
I didn't think he was really in the water.
We didn't know that he actually went to the hospital after that and nearly died. No, I'm just
kidding. They're all fairly old, so
actually the last of the scene that I it was kind of an uncomfortable scene. And it wasn't really uncomfortable. It was just awkward. And Perseus takes this like hour and a half flight with Pegasus, and he's got Medusa's head finally. And the Kraken's already there. And I just thought it was just really funny as, like, you know, he's stumbling with the bag and he's doing this like awkward flyby right by the Kraken's face. And he's just like staring at him all weird. And yeah. It was just like, and of course he's going to drop it.
Yeah.
You know,
that was kind of weird.
Because literally if you just worked out, it was
a little
like,
more suspense
and then done. Yeah. Exactly. You just had like to have the suspense level suspense. For it. Otherwise it would be like, oh, you know, otherwise the movie, like Josh said, I mean, I would have been fine with the shit just ending at Medusa, you know, the whole last part. I was like, you know, the ending kind of didn't really climax to me.
Well, yeah, it really seemed like the ultimate task was to defeat Medusa,
right?
Just to like because I mean the Kraken really it's like it could have killed thousands of people, whereas Medusa might just kill a few people, but
yeah,
you need to kill Medusa to kill the Kraken,
right? Exactly.
So it seemed like the Kraken was secondary. It was kind of like, meh, yeah, great, yeah. Of course he was going to kill that, but I mean, was he going to kill Medusa? He didn't know.
You can't say, of course, he's going to kill a Kraken if you're unsure he's going to kill Medusa.
Yeah. I mean, but you know,
if you're 100% sure he's killing the Kraken, then he's killing Medusa.
I know. But after he killed Medusa, you're like, well, he's going to kill the Kraken.
Okay. I think that's the Kraken.
But before that,
just
before
he killed Medusa, he's like, the movie could have ended pre-Medusa. Would have been a terrible movie, but yeah. It could have. I see it. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I think the Kraken was meant to pay off the love story, but that was an awkward kiss.
Oh,
yeah. It was like they go in. It's like, yay, you saved me, and it's like, doesn't he turn his cheek or something, or she turns? I can't remember. It just did not pay off like you thought it was going to pay off.
No, not at all. Well, because you know why? I think it was back then because Harry Hamlin actually was banging.
He was boning Aphrodite.
Aphrodite, and they actually had a baby together.
Oh,
at the end of production.
He was Zeus-ing the fucking crew. Man.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Ew, that was his mom.
Right?
No, it wasn't his gross, mom. Gross, bro. Oh, no, it wasn't. Who is it? Who is Aphrodite to him?
Aphrodite was the hot blonde goddess that didn't say much.
She had a line, if anything.
Yeah. Oh.
But yeah, so they that's what happened there. So maybe that would...
Do you think it was pre... Do you think she got the part pre-Hamlin or post-Hamlin?
I wonder, she got it pre-Hamlin, and Hamlin fucking Zeus'd her on the set.
I'm just going to choose that Hamlin invited her on because he loved her.
But this isn't The Fly.
We'll stop that there, I guess.
I have a little trivia that I stumbled upon today.
Ooh,
about,
cool.
About the music.
Oh, okay.
Because I heard an old interview with Ray Harryhausen. He was basically, Ray Harryhausen didn't direct this movie.
Yeah.
But he's such a big part of it that he has to dictate, okay, I need this shot. So he's really...
kind of directing.
Yeah, you kind of know these as Ray Harryhausen movies. But he said that John Williams passed on the score for this, but recommended... Lawrence Rosenthal, who ended up doing the music for it.
Okay.
So John Williams was like, yeah, this isn't my kind of a thing.
Not my gig.
Yeah.
And, but so it's really interesting.
I think that's funny too, because I did have something to say about the music, because the whole beginning scene of when, you know, he's casting her out and everything, and it's all dark and dreary. And then like the music for the movie starts, and it's all like happy and like just... a really uplifting, yeah, it's a very uplifting song after like such a tragedy just happened, kind of. And it's like,
yeah,
I felt that scene, and like they kept throwing that theme music in periodically that just kind of like didn't really fit to me.
Well, it was like one of those, it was like a classically, you know, formatted movie where they like rolled the credits before the movie.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah,
they like had that cold open with like Perseus being cast away, and then they're like, roll credits.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
So they had to play that music that would carry it throughout. It's like, you know.
So
and then the getting old montage with the horse training and stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. So do we want to, you know, do some ratings for this? I mean,
I don't know.
Like I said,
I might as well. We've done it from every other movie, so we gotta keep it going.
Sure, until the audience tells us not to, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't care about our ratings, then just tell us.
So if you don't care about our ratings, rate us and review us.
Exactly.
And let us know.
You know what's interesting, though? I do care about your ratings, so the audience can just go, you know what? Shut off. That.
Then we'll
shut off, audience.
Well, I guess I'll start because it's my pick. So I love the movie, obviously. That's why I picked it. So for me... I like it at first nostalgia rating, so I'm going to give it up there. I'm going to do like a 7.7 because, you know, just because of that.
I thought it was
a lot of nostalgia for me.
I thought you'd have been a little higher on there. So
well, 7.7. I mean, I'm really creep into an 8. I want to creep to an 8. I'm almost an 8. I might be an 8. No, I'm 7.7.
Dude, Zeus that 8.
Yeah, Zeus that 8.
You gotta Medusa that 8 over a little bit, man. Medusa pop that up to an 8.
It's basically an 8, I mean, really, but yeah.
What about you, Wyatt?
I'd give it a solid 7, and it holds up. You know, it's so funny when you talked about how like you didn't know it was gonna be seem so old, you know, but be new. And I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but if it is, like, bravo, because when you look at like all these other movies from the 80s, they're not like that, you know.
I actually never thought of it like that.
So that's what I mean. Is it like supposed to be like a throwback, you know, or is it?
It really wasn't. I mean, it was just that.
No, it was just shitty.
Josh is like, no, nope. Or is it like you were saying, like, stupid movie. Like Star Wars had like raised the bar so much that seemed like
what happened. Like they were already in motion,
in production,
or at least thinking about this movie, and it was just going to be the next movie that Ray Harryhausen was going to work on, and you know it was his biggest, most ambitious one, and he outdid himself, but still, Star Wars was just so innovative that it just. Yeah. That's what happened. Like we were like, oh, now we can have this.
Well, yeah.
This is what we were used to before, and this was Ray Harryhausen's last feature film.
It was
partly because of that. It was hard for him to get financing after that.
Well, that's too bad because it was a great movie. But like going with the Star Wars thing, I mean, with the motion capture system that they use for the spaceships flying. But a lot of that stuff is so dark in composure. And when you're like, you know, it's different because the Harryhausen thing was so on a light scale, you could see everything. You know, and I think that had a play with it because in Star Wars, everything's dark. Everything's in space. Everything's but, you know.
But his work inspired so many filmmakers. And this was one of the last movies of the 80s that was so heavy with stop motion. But what you'll see after that is that stop motion became more of an effect. So you've got 1983, it's in Return of the Jedi.
Uh-huh.
1984, it's in The Terminator. In 87, you've got RoboCop and Batteries Not Included. So the people that he inspired Spielberg, George Lucas, you know, it kept on going for a long time, just not to the extent of Clash of the Titans. This was maybe one of the last big stop motion fantasy epics
where it's like everything that's not human is going to be stop motion. Yeah, basically.
Totally.
So Josh, with that said, what do you give it as a part of the rating?
I'm kind of like 7.5, 8. I'm going to say 8 just because of Medusa. I love that.
You're biased though.
I am biased. Because
I'm going to go. I'm going to give it I'm going to give Harryhausen a 6. Because when you take him what he did out of the movie, and the movie's not very good. I mean, the acting is what it is. I'm not a big Harry Hamlin fan as far as acting goes.
Right.
You know, it sucks because Laurence Olivier is amazing, but. You know, just none of it really captured me as far as the acting goes. Medusa was amazing. So, mm-hmm.
No nostalgia factor for
it. And I don't have the nostalgia factor. So, right. Harryhausen.
Absolutely.
Made it a watchable movie. I loved everything about what he did. So, I'll give him a 6. I'll give the movie a 6.
That's fair.
That's not bad. Yeah. Actually, that's one of the higher ratings that you've given my films so far.
I'm actually savage.
Yeah,
I'm actually really biased. I'm actually really biased when it comes to Top Gun 2 because I love it. I don't care how old it looks. I know how much time it takes, and I'm really impressed with it. No matter it's even when it's done today. I mean, we went to your film, animation festival, and it's even in 2018 still really impressive to me. So think about it 40 years ago. I think, holy crap, you know, that is really, it's really impressive when you think about it like that.
Absolutely.
Because I still look at it and think, holy shoot, I can't, you know, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do what you do. So, I mean, I don't have the patience or the skills or the knowledge to do it. So it's, you know, even now it's pretty cool. So.
That's cool. You know, I'll take that, man. For me, that was a win for me. For Chris, you know, because I usually get slaughtered with it.
I mean, I haven't hated your movies. I just, you know, I don't like them very much. So. this one was a solid movie.
Okay, sweet. I'll take that, man.
Cool.
All right. So, anyway, so like we said before, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And actually, Wyatt, you got a pick coming up. What's that going to be?
We're gonna dip into the 1981 year again, and we're gonna be watching a movie that's I'm sure many people have seen who are from our generation. That's Time Bandits, and some people haven't.
I haven't seen it.
Chris hasn't.
I never saw it.
So I expect a low rating from him.
Josh, we'll have to thank you for stopping by on this one. And actually, he's gonna return for Time Bandits as well. So that'll be great. So thanks for joining us on Simistash Reach Hash. Let me do that again because that was Shimash Hash Reach Hash. Thanks for listening to. The Cinema Stash Rehash. We'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cinema Stash Rehash. Be sure to give us some awesome iTunes reviews, like us on Facebook. Don't forget to check out past episodes and join us next time on Cinema Stash Rehash.